to the training in economic discipleship based around 10 biblical principles of kingdom economics. This will be delivered with 30 podcasts or MP3s, beginning with a one-day or two-day consultation and finishing with a reporting back one day where you bring back your stories based on your evaluation. In session 5, we will look at the Pentateuch, the first 5 books of the Bible written by Moses, and examine some of the economic themes in those books because they are the foundation out of which Jesus' economics develops. You may wish to pause your podcast at various points in order to read the passages that are mentioned. So we have looked at the themes of the kingdom of God and its relationship to the land and to humanity. We've looked at the poor and poverty in the Old Testament. So these we've looked at from the book of Genesis. Now we want to extend the teaching by looking at other parts of the Pentateuch, the first 5 books of the Bible, attributed to Moses historically, and in them we find both God speaking and yet he's speaking utilizing existing systems that were part of Moses' understanding from Ethiopia, from Midian, from Egypt, and from the rest of the Middle East. We begin with the issue of interest and loans for the poor. Then we'll look at living on quail and manna. And thirdly, we'll look at the Melchizedek tithe. First, let's look at Exodus 22, verses 25 to 27. And there we find the issue of loans for the poor. You might pause your podcast and look at that passage now. This is a passage which seeks to regulate the treatment and protect the interests of the disenfranchised and the vulnerable groups within Israel. Subsistence loans, as well as compassionate handling of essential items such as pawning clothes, were meant to help people cope with extreme poverty so there would not be a source of gain for the lenders. We're to be supportive and compassionate, treating such poor people with the kindness that they would show to resident aliens. Solidarity is to be expressed by refraining from charging of interest in giving loans to the poor. If we loan a poor person, he gives you the coat as a way of showing he will repay, and he can't repay, give his coat back to him. Then we find in Deuteronomy 15, verse 1 to 18, and again you might pause and review and read that passage, more laws that aim to alleviate suffering caused by debt and oppression among the Israelite community. Borrowing is always part of every society, but the sabbatical principle is here applied to the matter of debt, commanding creditors to remit their claims every 7 years. In other words, there's a no to the economic system that keeps people eternally in debt. The passage contains a stark statement, there should be no poor among you, in verse 4. Contrasted with verse 11, there will always be poor people among you. So here's a contradiction. There should be no poor, but there always will be poor. And this contradiction shows us that God's purpose is that there be no poor. The reality is that there are poor, therefore we are to open our hands to the poor and support and care for them as best we can. The ultimate intention of God is that poverty should be abolished. Now, a third passage is in Deuteronomy chapter 23, verse 19 to 20. Again, pause and read that passage. it explicitly forbids the charging of interest within the Israelite community while permitting interest on loans to foreigners. Now, if it's within your own community, there's a prohibition because there should be no interest on money, no interest on provision, no interest on anything that is lent, not just among the poor, but among the Israelites, because you have ongoing relationships with each other. Obedience to this command is linked to God's blessing, so that the Lord your God may bless you in all your undertakings. So this close-knit community is to care for each other. But with foreigners, there's some difference, because the foreigner is here today and gone tomorrow, and so there's a risk, there's a much higher risk, and so loans were permitted with foreigners to minimize that risk. And it meant that Israel could take its place as an equal partner in the commercial arena of the ancient Middle East. I don't know how that applies in the slums where you have people from different countries, because these people have come to settle. They're not just foreigners coming and going. They've come to settle. And so it would appear to me that the issue of inclusion of such people is a more important issue than the issue of exclusion because they are foreigners. There are other Old Testament texts that mention interest more briefly, and we'll look at these at another time. It's always with a mark of disapproval. A righteous person does not lend at interest. The person who may dwell in God's sanctuary is one who lends his money without interest. And the righteous man of Ezekiel is similarly defined. Nehemiah became very angry when he learnt that the Israelites had been brought back to the promised land, to Jerusalem, and some of them were exacting interest from their fellow countrymen and forcing them into financial slavery. Area we can look at is the living on quail and manna. So here, before the people came into the promised land, and because of disobedience, they are wandering in the desert for 40 years. And God provides for them supernaturally. Now, some of you have lived by faith and are living by faith, and you wonder, well, maybe I'm a sinful man, because all of us are. We know the depth of our depravity. Perhaps God will not be providing for me. Certainly there is an issue of righteousness with God. We need to seek his blessing. But there's also an issue when he makes a covenant with us that he fulfills his covenants. And so if he's called us, as he did with Peter, to leave our nets and to follow him in full-time ministry, and it's a genuine call. Some people just say, oh, okay, I got called, but it's not really from the Lord. But if it's a real call that has been very clear, then there is this promise of the Lord to provide for us. And here is the example of 40 years where he provides quail during the day, each day. And he provides the manna, it's like seed that came from a bush, like bread for the people. And even the people complained about God's provision. It wasn't the fancy food of Egypt and the fancy spices that they had in Egypt, but God provided for them. And so there is this consistent theme throughout the scriptures of God providing in supernatural ways for his people beyond the normal processes. There's also the theme that if we live a righteous life, there will be added blessing. As we go about our normal business, he adds more to it. The Christian will be perhaps blessed an extra 10%. Abraham and then Jacob, we see God's blessing on them despite their imperfect faith, despite their disobediences. So if God is your source, then why are you struggling to make ends meet? He is Jehovah Jireh, your provider. And we can keep coming up with worldly solutions. God's solutions are very different. He says to focus on Him, to be obedient to Him, and then He will provide. He has a plan for you, and He wants you to follow His strategy. This provision lasted for 40 years. And then when they reached the promised land, they entered the promised land, it stopped. Now they were to live off the fruit of the land, and they would live off their hard work, and so it's a very different process, except for the priests. And the priests were to continue to be supported by the Lord. In this case, then, Israel set up structures to provide funding for the priestly tribe. There's something supernatural in these processes. And it's something to do with a covenant relationship. It's something we see in the story of Elijah. So he is not a priest, but a prophet. And we find the same supernatural provision, where for 3 years there's a famine, and ravens bring him bread, and then meat in the morning and in the evening. Can you imagine that? In fact, today, I just had a bird fly into our house through the door. Now, what a beautiful bird it was. And he flew around a few times, obviously afraid and lost, and then he found his way back out through the door. And the thought of these ravens, how did they find this prophet? How did they know this prophet? Where did they get that bread and that food that they brought to him, bread and meat? This supernatural provision continued for Elijah, and then it stopped. And Elijah, what do I do now? And the Lord took him to the widow of Zarephath. And then each day as the widow cooked, the Lord replenished the supply of flour and oil. So we find these stories throughout the scriptures and throughout history of God's supernatural provision for the priests, for the prophets, for the apostles as they pioneer. And yet the Apostle Paul says, I know how to be abased and how to abound. Whatever, whether I'm in plenty or want, yet I trust the Lord. And this is our experience also, that while God provides, it's not always fancy provisions. And there are times when we do struggle, and yet He does continue to provide. And this also is my testimony for 40 years of God's provision in direct answers to prayer. However, some of us presume on God. Some of us say, okay, God has a covenant with me, when God doesn't have a covenant with me. Some of us say we have a call, but in fact, where did that call come from? So we need to be very, very careful and test ourselves. And we need the body of Christ to confirm the calling that God has given to us. For those who are pastors, there is also a different system of provision through the congregation in a normative weekly manner. And so systems become set up within churches and denominations that sustain the pastors, as was the priesthood in the Old Testament, somewhat different to the prophet, the evangelist, and the apostle. Now, the fourth thing we want to look at is the tithe. And here in the Old Testament, the beginning of the teaching about tithing comes from the story of Melchizedek and Abraham paying tithes to Melchizedek, and you can look up that story. And so here's Melchizedek, who's the priest of Salem, the priest of peace. Doesn't really say where he came from, who exactly he was. And yet Abraham understood him to be the priest of the high God, and he provided for him a tithe. Interesting story for us. And this principle of giving 10% that's demonstrated there in Genesis chapter 14, verse 20, and Hebrews 7, verse 6 repeats the story. So the dedication of a tenth to God was recognized as a duty before the time of Moses. So in the law, it becomes instituted, but it existed before the law. Jacob also vowed to the Lord and said, "Of all that you give me, I will surely give the tenth to you." Then in the law, every Jew was required by the Levitical law to pay three tithes of his property. One tithe for the Levites, the priesthood, so a structure to sustain the priests. One for the use of the temple and the great feasts. So one of the feasts, they had to provide money for their wives to buy dresses to celebrate. And thirdly, one for the poor of the land. And the first Mosaic law on the subject is recorded in Leviticus 27, 30-32, and you might pause and read that passage. And then subsequent legislations regulated the destinations of the tithes. The paying of the tithes was an important part of the Jewish religious worship. And in the days of Hezekiah, one of the first results of the revival of his time, the reformation of religion, was the eagerness with which the people brought in their tithes. So the neglect of this duty was sternly rebuked by the prophets. And then we come to the institution of these principles in the Jubilee year, which was an ancient Ethiopian custom from before the time of Moses, and a custom perhaps that he converted to a national custom within Israel. And so we've got this principle of the tithes. We see it in different places. It comes over into the prophets speaking against those who don't tithe. In the New Testament, there is no teaching on tithing. There is teaching on giving, a freedom of giving and sacrificial giving. And yet most of us do teach of tithing as the basics, but we have to be very careful not to teach of tithing as the law.